So welcome back to episode 3 of the Run It Three Ways podcast from myself, Callum and Tom. Happy New Year to everyone that's tuned in. Do you guys stay up to see the New Year in last night, guys?
Do you know what? I didn't, but I was with, I had summer over the weekend. So I was actually in bed by about 9 p.m, which was incredible.
Lovely.
But I was woken up by flashing and fireworks out the window, which then...
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So it was actually quite nice, to be honest. We watched fireworks for a bit and then went back to sleep again. And that was my that was my rip-roaring New Year's Eve.
Lovely. Wow. That was exciting.
Yeah, nearly as exciting as mine there. I was in the centre of London, actually.
Wow.
Now I'm a southerner. So I thought, let me venture into the capital, see the fireworks with my actual eyes. And... yeah, it turns out they were just behind a building that was right in front of me. So I saw the top of some of the fireworks, but you know, it was good fun.
Must have been a good atmosphere. I've always wanted to go down to London and see in the new year. But I've heard mixed reviews, actually, from people that have been down to the fireworks.
Yeah, well, consider this a very neutral review from me. Not good, not bad. Just, it was all right.
Yeah. Would you do it again?
I'd do it again just so I could actually see the bloody fireworks. Yeah, probably would.
Fair enough. And New Year's for me, I was planning on going to a bit of a house party, but unfortunately, as I'll talk you through, in my week of training, I was ill this week again. Happy days.
Oh no.
Yeah, so didn't make it to the party. We just went to Meg's parents to see in the new year, just watch the classic Jules Holland on the telly and watch the fireworks, and then had a night on the air mattress. Happy days.
Fantastic.
Very romantic, yeah.
before we jump into the weeks, actually, I was going to say there's a couple of shout outs I wanted to do. First of all, and most importantly, made a little bit of a joke on the previous couple of episodes about mums not listening to the podcast.
Yeah.
We've actually got a real life mum called Emma Holmes who listens to the podcast. She space buns and smiles on Instagram. She's a mum of two, a marathon runner and an ultra runner. And by the looks of it, she's actually had an incredible transformation through running when it comes to weight loss. She's lost about 91 pounds, which is outrageous.
Go on, Emma.
So, yeah, thank you for listening, Emma. We actually really appreciate it. And then the other one was Rory, who wrote into the podcast about trying to break his 5K PB at a park run. And he did. He ran 17:26 at Hillsborough Park Run.
Incredible.
And he gave us a little bit of credit there as well in his.
Yeah,
in his
and he board. Said, and he actually replied to the comment saying he's going for sub-17 next time. So no worries.
That is exponential growth.
Every week he's just going to take 30 seconds off. Apparently that's what.
Oh, he did. He commented that. So Rory, I believe in you, mate. Go for it.
All you got to do is listen to an episode of the Run It Three Ways, and that will take 30 seconds off your 5K PB. So,
come on, Rory, let's have it.
You've heard it here first.
Wonderful. Anyway, that's all. I just wanted to give those two people a little bit of a shout out before we get into our weeks.
No worries. Thanks for that. Jumping into the training weeks. Who fancies tackling it first?
I reckon Ben. Go on. You get stuck in. Tell us your tale.
I'll get my miserable week out of the way, and then we can hopefully. Talk us through some proper training this week. My week started with a race on Monday, which was actually a real highlight of the year, to be honest with you. So it all started well. It was the traditional runners versus cyclists race that takes place in Colchester every year annually on Boxing Day between Colchester's Running Club and Colchester's Cycling Club. It's actually been taken place since 1930s, I believe. So it's pretty historic event. And that was probably the third year I've done it now. I did it last year and again this year. And yeah, it's an incredible event. It's a 6 kilometer course all through the sort of woods and proper cross country. Like you've got to cross a couple of rivers and fords, up and down hills. There's places where the cyclists have to actually jump off the bike and like run through the ford as well.
I love that.
So it's an absolute wicked event to be a part of. Unfortunately, the cyclists won again this year. I think that's like the 20th year in a row that they've won the event.
Have the runners ever won?
They have done. It's been going for 90 years, and I reckon for the over the last 90 years, the runners have probably won it maybe 20, 30 times. So
okay.
Ben, walk me through this. It can be done. I'm interested. Walk me through this, right? Because I've seen the clip, as I'm sure many people have, of you just like absolutely nailing it.
It's and barbaric.
Racing, yeah. Racing a guy that's on a bike. But I'm interested in the rest of the race.
Yeah.
Do you like do the cyclists get a massive lead on you on certain parts and then you catch them up, or do you find that you've got a lead? Like, how does it work?
Yeah, so this year the start was a little bit different. It usually starts on a hill and the cyclists basically just absolutely bomb it down the hill and you never see them again. So this year it was like started on a bit of a incline. So the runners actually had a chance to get to the sort of woods area first, which made it a little bit more interesting because basically the cyclists got caught behind the runners. And then when it came to the faster sections, they couldn't get through as easily, which made it a lot more competitive this year. But yeah, naturally, the cyclists can go quite a bit faster on certain sections of the course. And runners can catch up in the more technical areas. So like through the water, on the really steep inclines, the cyclists are slowed a little bit. But yeah, it was won this year by a really talented rider from Colchester called Callum Hurst. Great name. I think his name's Callum. Hope I've got that right.
Well done. Well done, Callum.
And yeah, he was 5 minutes ahead of the rest of the field, which is just incredible. Especially over 6 kilometers to build up that sort of lead. I believe he cycles for maybe GB or at least for Essex for cyclocross. So he's clearly extremely talented over that sort of terrain.
I was going to ask actually, like you sort of just answered the question already, but I was going to ask what sort of level of cyclists rock up to this thing, because it seems pretty like a pretty niche event, right?
But yeah, there's only about 20-30 bikes this year. I think maybe in previous years there's been a few more, but the majority of them seem pretty experienced on that sort of like cyclocross terrain. But you do get your odd like punter to turn up on his mountain bike and try and give it a go. it's all a good laugh on Boxing Day. Yeah, stabilizers trying to cycle through the mud. But I think I came fifth this
year. Four wheel drive.
I don't think it'd help much.
Before, do you reckon?
I don't think so, mate. But maybe you could give it a go next year.
I don't know about that.
But yeah, it happens every year. It's a great event. I've got a YouTube video coming out on it in the next few days. Hopefully that'll be up if you want to see a little bit more about that. But that was Monday. Good little race to start the week. And then on Tuesday and Wednesday, had some decent easy runs. I think on Tuesday was 14 kilometres, averaging 4:20 per kilometre. And then on Wednesday, I caught up with a friend called Callum. Another Callum. Wow.
There's
a lot of Callums. Yeah. Callum Charleston, this guy from athletics club Chelmsford, and we did sort of a longer steady run on Wednesday. I think it was around 17 and a half kilometers about 11 miles. And then I woke up on Thursday with basically the flu-like symptoms. Couldn't get out of bed, was in bed for Thursday and Friday, which was not great. There were days where I just definitely couldn't run. Like temperature, body was just really achy. But thankfully, it seems to have cleared up over the weekend. And I was able to run again on Saturday, only 5K. And I felt really rough, to be honest with you. And today I went out for a run as well. And I managed 6K today. So an improvement on Saturday, but no Sunday long run for me this week, and a pretty low training week of about 50 kilometers. So not quite the week I was hoping for, especially with now 8 weeks to go before my next marathon in Japan. I was hoping to start building the mileage up ahead of that training block, but yeah, it's gonna have to be a little bit more of a rushed build up. Hopefully I won't pick up any injuries along the way, but I'm just gonna have to do it gradually over the next few weeks and just hope the fitness comes back ready for Osaka.
Yeah, I think the important thing there is you can't chase the training, right? So I think you've done the right thing with having 2 days off, and let's say that you can train next week, even if you're training at, say, 80%, compared to if you'd run through those days, you might have not been yourself for 2 or 3 weeks. And when you've got 8 weeks to a marathon, you need to be fit to get the quality sessions in.
Yeah, but,
I guess the worst thing you could do next week is go run 100 miles. You need to kind of phase it up and build it in nicely.
Yeah, for sure. And that's definitely that will be the focus moving forward. Build it up slowly. I'll probably keep intensity fairly low next week and hopefully build some mileage. But yeah, play it by ear over the next few weeks and hopefully build up to some serious mileage in maybe the next 3 or 4 weeks. But yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, you got to think as well. I remember it's an anecdote from Nick Harris-Fry from the Run Testers, who's done a few. I can't remember exactly how many marathons he's done this year, but he ran unbelievably well at Berlin and then had a solid outing at Valencia as well.
Yeah,
and he did that in Valencia off basically no, I don't want to say no training, but it wasn't a specific block. It was just a few weeks of, you know, pretty normal running. And I messaged, we're both coached by Andy, so I messaged Andy and was like, how is he doing this? And his response was just that he's built such a strong base over the whole course of the year.
Yeah, he just a few carries down his fitness weeks, over.
Yeah, the fitness is still there. It's just, you know, you're not as sharp, so you might not, you know, he might not be as fresh in Valencia, but he's still got all the fitness to run, you know, comfortably under 2:30. And I think for you, 8 weeks is still a long time with the amount of fitness that you've gained over the last year. So, yeah I think what Callum said, you just don't stress about it. And, go with the flow. And I reckon you'll be absolutely fine. 8 weeks is a long time in running wise, isn't
it? Yeah,
it
is. Yeah.
When it comes to getting fitness back. So, you'll be flying.
But yeah, that's my week. Nothing too special. Hopefully next week will be better. But who's up next?
I don't mind going next, Tom, unless you've got anything against that.
I have no objections. Go on, Callum.
Lovely stuff. You'll have to bear with me because I'm not actually doing this off Strava. I'm doing it just directly from the training diary. So I don't have the map to recall where I was, but I'll try my best.
Old school.
Is that like manually written down training diary?
That's with a black biro straight into the old paper.
I like that.
As they did back in the day. okay, Monday. So that was Boxing Day, wasn't it? Yep, cool. 9 miles in the morning, 9.06 miles at 7:13. I did that one with JB and John. Nice little post-Christmas blowout, so to speak. Nothing really to report. Nice, easy run. And then I doubled in the afternoon, or the evening, in fact, with 2.64 miles at 7:12, which was... And basically, I was supposed to have 12 for the day, so I've done 11.7, which is slightly below. The reason I've only done a 2.64-mile run is because I was going from one destination to another. Otherwise, obviously, I would have made it.
From your house to the pub.
Well, close enough from my house to a friend's house, yes. So, brilliant. Just so people don't think I actually would go out and just do a 2.64-mile run. That was a point-to-point, so to speak. Tuesday, had to get up pretty early on Tuesday because I had a train to catch to get my session done. The hill session, which was, I actually live on a hill, Oakwell Mount in Round A. If anyone's been there, I won't tell you what number, but get yourself down. it's a big old hill. I did three sets of 20 seconds, 30 seconds, 40 seconds, 60 seconds. So that's just hard up pretty much whatever effort you can sustain, and then a nice jog back down. And then after that, I had a 2 mile tempo or sub tempo. I did that at 5:20s on a hilly-ish loop. So pretty solid work. Nothing fantastic. Nothing overly fun. But got it done. So that was 10 miles for the day.
How just quickly, Callum? How do you find kind of this time of year when it's so dark? Like, what time are you doing this session? So your warm up was 7:39 in the morning.
Yeah.
Do you struggle with running at that time of the
yeah,
morning?
Yeah, I do because because I'm not used to it. I think like I said, because I had to get a train, I had to get up and do it. Because later in the day, I had family stuff on, would be eating, drinking, wouldn't get a chance to do the session. So getting up when your body's not in the routine, I think it's, you know, so confused as to why you're running. You've not fueled your body, things like that. Yeah. I know a lot of really good runners though that do manage to, credit to them, train before and after work, after a 9 to 5, where they're in the winter especially training in the dark and the wet in the morning and then doing the same in the evening, and they get, you know, some incredible results. So I think if you get into the routine and you manage to do it, then it's not as hard as if you're just randomly throwing an early morning session like I did.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I got one of these chest lights. I don't know if you ever run with a head torch or anything. I've always seen people wearing them and thought, it's a bit overkill, bit of an ultra sort of thing to do. But we needed one just because it was getting so dark. And I went to what's the shop called? Not Dunelm, what's it called? Decathlon.
Decathlon, yeah.
Yeah, shout out Decathlon. And I got myself one of these crossbody like chest lights. It was only about 20 quid, and it is actually really good. Like, I actually enjoy running in the dark sometimes now. So,
wow.
Yeah, we would recommend that over the head torch, that's for sure. God, what a sidetrack. Wednesday, where are we up to? So Wednesday I had 8.12 miles at 6:46. That was really, really wet run. That just poured it down from start to finish. Yeah, that was carnage, that one. At one point I basically ran through a river, and it wasn't meant to be a river. It was just a puddle. not a good one. Wiped that one from the memory. Thursday I had another double day, so I did 3.5 in the morning at 7:56. That was with Alice, my girlfriend, so nice and easy. And then in the afternoon I did 7.2 miles at 6:57 by myself, so 10.5 on the day. Again, nothing too crazy. That brings getting us on done. To Friday. So Friday was a big session. This was a kind of a longer threshold type session. And it was so windy at the Eddington Loop in Cambridge. When it's windy, you really know about it on one part of the loop. So I knew this was a case of just, you know, gritting my teeth and getting on with it, really. Going more off effort than pace. So yeah. The session was 4 times a mile to start with. So I did the first rep was supposed to be a bit quicker to kind of simulate going out hard-ish in a cross-country race and then trying to settle back down into the pace to kind of not lactic, but kind of spike your heart rate a little bit and then settle down. So 4 times a mile in 4:42, 4:47, 4:48, 4:51 off 2 minutes. And then a 2 mile rep, which was 9:53. So a little bit slower for that one. And then another mile rep at the end, which was a 4:49. So basically all around 4:50-ish pace, a little bit under.
Solid work.
For a bigger threshold session, all off 2 minutes. So yeah, it's pretty good. The longer stuff is where I'm a lot weaker, and I do feel a lot more benefit than, you know, say the session I had last week of those 24 200s. I don't really feel like I'm getting fit from it. It just feels like, oh, you know, it's nice to run fast. Whereas sessions like this, I really do feel like I'm getting fitter and stronger. So good session, that one. By myself, again, in the wind. So yeah, decent enough.
Yeah, it's juicy, that is. Solid session.
Yeah, really, really good.
Yeah, good session. It's weird because it's only, 7 miles of work, which, you know, when you think about it, it's only a bit more than 10K. In the grand schemes of marathon, half marathon sessions, it's not very big. But when you're training for a 1500 in the summer, it's, you know, pretty sizable. So decent enough.
And how are you getting all of this, so like the videos and stuff from your most recent sessions? Is that your poor girlfriend who's out? in sleep conditions filming you?
You will have seen, if you follow me on Instagram, that during this festive period where most people have annual leave, there's been a large spike in my video content, which is a notable correlation, because Alice has not been doing her day job, so she's been put to work on the old bicycle and has been providing
trooper.
I mentioned on the last podcast, this is becoming a bloody girlfriend segment here. I mentioned on the last podcast that she did a track session and that she was destroyed for 2 days because of the lactic.
Oh, yeah.
Well, she actually did a session on this day, and obviously we're running at the same time, and my session was going to be slightly longer. And credit to her, as soon as she finished her cool down, I've never seen her jump on a bike and try and cycle to catch up with me, because I was on the last rep. So yeah, shout out to Alice for that one. I know she's not listening, but
that is commitment.
Yeah. I know we joke around and stuff, but that's genuinely lovely. Like, it's very, very wholesome, that.
She doesn't do it for free, you know, because we do have a large amount of OTE flapjacks coming into the house as part of a sponsorship deal. But let me tell you, I do not eat them and they disappear. So
paid in flapjacks.
She knows that if we can grow the followers account, it might be more than flapjacks coming her way. So, you know, there you go. Right, that brings me on to Saturday, which was the 31st. This was actually my birthday. I wasn't supposed to have a long run, but because I was going out and enjoying myself, I didn't really want to leave the long run to New Year's Day, the Sunday. So I did 13.88 miles at 6:45. Nothing special, just literally had to get the mileage done, really. Bit of a slog, but at least it was done, so I could, you know, go out and enjoy myself, not have to worry about the miles.
Was that one solo, or did you have company on your birthday?
No, that was by myself, that one. And the thing is, I do a lot of my running by myself, not because no one will run with me, but more because I'm a bit lazy with reaching out to run with people. Because, you know, when you want a bit of flexibility in the day, I don't know if I'm going to run at 10 or 11 or, at, you know, in the afternoon. So, yeah, a lot of the time I find myself just sticking to my own devices.
That's fair enough, yep.
And then,
did you get anything nice for your birthday?
Did I get anything nice? I got a lot of nice things, actually. If anyone that bought me a gift's listening, thanks for your gift. let me just think. So close to Christmas, I always forget which is for Christmas and birthday because my parents just kind of, you know, give me some things. But I'll give you a couple of highlights from the festive season. We got some new tea towels for the kitchen.
Fantastic.
Yeah, because
can never have enough.
You should see the state of the old ones. I'm telling you, I'm one of those people that, you know, when a bit of coffee's on the side and you really should get the wet cloth to do it, I just put the tea towel on it. Not a problem.
Oh no,
you're a barbarian.
Over weeks that does build up, so we got a fresh new 7-pack in the cupboard now. So that's good. So stay tuned for them because they could last a while, actually. Probably one a month, I reckon, we'll get through, which is a short lifespan for a tea towel. On the kitchen theme, I actually got a new Leeds United mug as well, which on first inspection only had a Leeds badge on the front, and I thought, oh, that's all right, Dad, like, thanks a lot. But when I spun it around, it has Tyler Adams, the USA central defensive midfielder, on the back. So it's the small touches, because he knows I like him, so it's the small touches.
Yeah,
they're two of my favourite presents, I'd say. Sorry for the more valuable gifts that I've missed out there, but thanks a lot, guys. And Sunday, that's today, the day of recording, right? I just did 5.17 miles at 7:14s, just nice and easy. Again, this run should have been yesterday and the long run should have been today. It's a bit weird to end the week on just a 5-mile run, but that's what I did. So it was 71.47 miles for the week. So pretty good volume, actually. I don't tend to go much higher than that anyway, really. It's always around 70, 75. So a pretty good week. It'll be lower next week because I'm racing on Sunday, a week today. So, yeah, can't really ask for any more. It wasn't any glamorous sessions, but some good strength work. I'll sharpen up a little bit next week and then hopefully have a good race.
Love it. Big week, that. Building nicely.
Yeah. Solid week, yeah. Solid. Tom?
Yeah, so I actually had a pretty good week as well, to be honest. Still, volume is still incredibly low, but kick-started Monday with just an easy 5 miles, 4:27 per K pace. Nothing really to note there. Apart from, this was the only dry run of the entire week. Every other run this week got absolutely, yeah, soaked. So small victories there. And then Tuesday, again, as is probably going to become pretty standard on this podcast, an easy to steady 5 miles. So progression run, basically. And I'm starting to feel better and better on these runs. Like, I remember a couple of weeks back, probably when we recorded the first episode, I was in the bin on anything other than like pure easy running. Whereas now, this one started at 4:14 per K and got down to 3:38 by the end, and actually felt good doing so. Which was, yeah, it's nice just to feel good running again. So 3:53. K average for that over 5 miles. So nothing special, but just for me, it's nice to start seeing a little bit of fitness coming back and to start feeling semi-decent on that type of run again. And chucked in some strides afterwards again, ready for a little session on the Wednesday.
Do you, Tom, when you do your steady running and your progressions, you mentioned, I think, last episode that you do everything just by feel, like you naturally get faster. Do you ever, like, if you're having a bit of a shit day or you're not feeling good, how do you know when to rein it in? Or do you just push through and you hit 6-minute miles, for example, every single, you know, every time?
Yes, it's a good question. So genuinely, I don't know how long I've done this for. It just sort of started happening. And I say more so in the winter when you're naturally wearing long sleeves and jackets. But every run apart from a session, my watch will be covered. So it is purely by feel. If I'm feeling a bit rubbish, I will just rein it back. Like, if I start running and I start running a bit easy and it feels hard and I know I'm going to be in for it's not going to be that pretty. I'll just intentionally take it easier on the first kind of half of that progression run. And then just pick it up a bit towards the end and see how I feel. So there's never really any pace prescribed for these easy to steady runs. They just, as you get fitter, they naturally seem to get faster.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, so I remember this time last year, I was sort of averaging 6 minute miles or just under for these steady runs, and I was doing a double either in the morning or in the evening afterwards too. So when I'm doing that and feeling good is when I know that I'm in decent shape or getting into decent shape. So I'm still way off that, but I'm getting there. So this session on Wednesday, we recorded the podcast on Wednesday this week, so it's a little bit weird, and you might remember me moaning about the weather outside because it was atrocious. Little warm up plus drills and strides, so 2 and a bit K. And then the session itself was 5-4-3-2-1 minutes, that is, followed by a 2 mile tempo. So 200 meter jog between those reps, and then 3 minutes jog before doing that tempo. I wasn't expecting much from this at all, mainly because it was, I think Strava saying it was about 30 kilometer winds, and it was just cold and rainy and just significantly unpleasant. But the actual session itself is the best I've felt for a long time. So get the splits up. The main purpose of this session really was to start at about current 10K feel, and work it down as those reps get shorter. So as you go from 5 minutes down to 1 minute, naturally just progress the pace and get closer to kind of 5K feel. So the 5 minutes was 3:29 average, 4 minutes, 3:32 average, 3 minutes, 3:23 average, 2 minutes, 3:21. And then the last minute was 3:13 per K. Obviously a minute rep, you can never be, the GPS is never going to be exactly bang on. But felt pretty good for all of those, to be honest. And then the 2 mile tempo, Andy said, like, if it's 12 minutes or around there, then that's probably what we're looking for, 6 minute miles. And it was 11:41, 3:37 per K. Brilliant. Average. So I surprised myself on this one, feeling way better than I expected. So happy days. It was the first time again that I've done a session where it's felt controlled and enjoyable doing it. You know, you can do a session and you can slog it out, but it's just not pretty. This was one of those where, like, during the rep I was conscious of feeling good, and that's a feeling I've not had for a very long time. So yeah, all smiles after that one.
Good to hear, mate.
What shoes did you have on for this one, Tom?
Great question, Ben. I thought you'd never ask. So I'm very precious with certain colorways and whatnot. And when it's raining, like a darker colorway has to take kind of precedent. So I wore the Adios Pro 3 for this one in the black and green colorway. Oh, yeah. Which,
good choice.
What a shoe. You know, we'll get into it when we talk about, you know, our favorite shoes of the year and whatnot after this, but yeah, incredible shoe. Definitely one of my favourites this year.
Especially in the wet conditions. As you said, abysmal running conditions.
Abysmal, yeah. Abysmal. Honestly, some of the worst conditions I've run in, I think, that. Just wet, windy, the whole shebang. But yeah, got it done. And then Thursday again, as is standard at the moment with building back, was a mandatory rest day. So I did virtually nothing that day. And then Friday, just a nice, easy 5 miles. Again, awful weather, wet, windy. But I noticed again that I'd done the same out and back loop on most runs this week.
Is there something at the end of your 5 mile loop? Like, is there something you touch when you get halfway, like a signpost, or do you have to run around someone's house at the end and then turn around, or anything like that?
No, literally nothing.
Nothing.
You go up a hill where it's alongside quite a busy road, which is horrible in itself. Then when you get up the hill, you turn onto a country lane, and then a few hundred meters down that country lane, I'll turn around and come back again. So yeah, there's it's just, especially at the moment with the weather, like I'm saying, that everywhere is so wet and so flooded that it's the only real easy option that I've got is just that out and back.
You are the king of an out and back. I think that's what we've learned from this podcast so far. Yeah,
I just don't mind it. Like, I speak to people who talk about they need to run different routes every day, or they have to do a loop, or, you know, whatever. Whereas with me, I really don't mind at all. I could do this same route every day of my life, and I don't think I'd get particularly bored of it. yeah, maybe that's more enough about me. But
have you experienced different, Tom? Like, when you started running, did you used to do different routes, or since you've been taking it seriously, has it always been this out and back?
No, this is really only at the moment where my running is so much lower on volume. Like when I was marathon training, I've got lots of different loops, like hilly loops, and you know.
I remember you mentioning.
So I'll do all sorts normally, but it's just at the moment when you're running for not much more than 30 minutes, there's just not many places I can go in that sort of time. But yeah, it's what it is at the moment. I promise I'll get some more exciting routes shortly. But yeah, stay tuned for that. anyway, what day was that? That was Friday. So then Saturday, we had another little session. Andy wanted me to do parkrun, but when I have summer for the weekend, it's impossible to really get anywhere at a certain time, let alone parkrun at 9 o'clock in the morning. So this session ended up being a little bit later in the afternoon. So the same standard warm-up, just a couple of K and drills and strides. And then it was just a pretty straightforward 5K progression. And I've described the conditions this time as unholy. which, you know, I'm running out of adjectives to describe the weather this week. But yeah, this was even worse, I think, than that session on Wednesday. But it was, it actually went pretty well. So it was just a 5K progression, starting at about 6 minute miles and ended up, 3:46 per kilometer to start with, and then worked down to 3:28 by the end. And I wore the OG Alpha Fly for this, Ben, before you ask. And I still don't think anything really comes close to it when it comes to just energy return and overall performance.
Never had a bad run in the original Alpha Fly. That's
you know,
sure.
I've still never tried on a pair of Alpha Fly.
Yeah, that's wow. Yeah. That's blasphemous, really. We've got to get you a pair.
Yeah, Tom will sort you out. What size are you, Callum?
Those will be UK 8.5, probably.
Oh, 8.5. Spot on. Yeah, same
that's exactly
me.
The same as Tom, yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's see what we can do.
I'd lend you a pair of mine, but they'd be a size too small for you, I'm afraid.
UK 8.5, I can work it out.
Yeah, nice. But yeah, anyway, this was a 3:38 per K average for the 5K, so 18:14, which nothing special, but the best thing about this is how good it felt. Again, especially in that weather, like there's on this little road loop, the pavement is pretty good, but when it's really wet, it's just covered in puddles. So I started off trying to avoid them like you do. And then by the second or third lap, I was just splashing ankle deep through the same puddle over and over again and just sort of had to embrace it. And you know when your t-shirt's so wet that it's completely stuck to you and it almost feels like it's restricting your breathing. Yeah, we were at that sort of level on this
run. Oh, that sounds lovely. And yeah. you still managed a decent run.
It was actually, surprisingly enjoyable. Like I had a great time on this run. The cool down was less pleasant because you're just absolutely sopping wet.
Just want to get home.
Yeah, it was only a mile back home, so it's not the end of the world. And then that brings us on to today, Sunday. So still no long runs really to speak of, although I got my training through for next week and we are starting to
I just read the caption longer. For the first time as well.
What's that? even doing a little loop. Yeah, so I did 10k 424 per k for this, pissed it down as is the norm this week. But yeah, I gave a little shout out to Ben here because I did do a little loop at the end. So if I'm running 10k, I can do the standard out and back that I would normally do, but add a little loop around a fairly awful, uninspiring housing estate, to be honest, and then go up the hill and back home again afterwards. So yeah, I actually got rolling at the end of this, somewhat unintentionally, probably because of how wet it was and I just wanted to get home and get it over with. But started really easy at 4:54 per K and finished just under 4 minute Ks. And again, like a bit lethargic to start with, but once I got going, felt really good. And that's my week in a nutshell.
Quick question, Tom. So you've had your training through for next week. If you can remember off the top of your head, what was your total volume this week compared to what it'll be next week?
So
because we've had a few listener questions, I know we're going to touch on one of them later in this episode, but a lot of people asking about how to build volume, what volume should look like. So I'm interested as someone who's got a top quality coach as to what kind of jump you're making.
Yeah, so it's painful at the moment, to be honest. And that's why I think having a coach is so beneficial, because if I didn't, I would, you know, I've run at my fittest, I've run sort of 90 miles a week, 70 miles a week, 80 miles a week as standard. And felt really good doing so. So for me, what I want to do now is just go straight back to that. I want to be running similar sort of mileage to you, Callum, like next week, because I feel good. But Andy, there's no chance he'll let me do that. So next week, just as an example, instead of like an easy 30 minutes, it will be 5 miles. And the sessions, there'll be a bit more volume to them. And the long run, instead of 10K, it's like an easy hour. So it will be an extra few K. So accumulatively, this week was 56, about 56 and a half K. Next week would probably be maybe 65-ish, something like that.
Okay, nice.
And then I reckon once I've banked a few weeks like that back to back is when I'll be able to make a jump back up to kind of 80, 90. And then hopefully in about 6 weeks' time, be in half decent shape and get some races in the calendar and have something a bit more exciting to talk about on this podcast.
Well, at least you've documented the process, mate. It's going to be it's going to be good. And I think a lot of people, it seems completely by luck that in the first three episodes, we've all had very different training weeks every week. If you see what I mean? There's not been a week where one of us hasn't had a slight lull or a slight, you know, I was ill the first episode. And then Ben, you've obviously had it this week. Tom, you've been building up slowly from the injury. I think it's good to have a different perspective. It's kind of what we intended to do and it's accidentally worked out exactly perfect so far. So no, I think it's good for people to get a different, a slightly different insight from each of us.
Yeah, I hope so. And once we start, you know, like obviously Callum, you're running really strong at the moment and done, you know, you're still racing quite frequently, but hopefully myself and you, Ben, will, when we get back out there and get back on the start line, we'll, we have to look back on these sorts of episodes, these early episodes and just see how that progress came about, I suppose. So yeah, it's good fun documenting the process.
100%. So moving on from our training weeks, do we want to jump into some of our highlights from 2022?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's wrap this year up.
Have a little bit of a roundup, shall we?
All right, nice one. So I think what we decided we were going to do first is kind of not necessarily speak about ourselves, but more our opinions on how running has gone this year. Obviously, 2022 was huge for track and field and road running, really, with all the major championships that we had. Obviously, Jake Whiteman just got plunged into sports personality success, which I think has made a lot of people actually who don't know much about running work out what has gone on in track and field and running. But as people that are pretty keen, I think we'll have some interesting opinions on some of our takes of what are our favourite things and people from the year. So let's kick things off with, boys, your favourite female athlete from the year. So best favourite, it's basically who you think has had a great year, why you think they've had a great year. Thoughts?
So yeah, I've gone for Ailish McColgan as my female athlete of the year, mainly for her Commonwealth Games performance, that 10,000 meters that she ran. I don't know if you guys watched it live, but that was a phenomenal race. Basically, she sat on the shoulder of the Kenyan athlete literally until the last 200 meters, and then kicked past her to take the gold medal in front of not quite a home crowd, but it certainly felt like it. And it was just phenomenal. I think it actually brought a tear to my eye at the time.
I remember your Instagram story from watching it. Actually,
yeah, I think Megs had filmed me or something like that. Yeah, and I was just sitting there on the edge of my seat. And just the grit and determination that she had coming around that last bend was just, it was incredible. And then the whole story that came out afterwards that her mum had won the Commonwealth gold for the same event 36 years prior. I just thought that put sort of the cherry on top of that story, and that's why I put her as my favorite female athlete of the year, and definitely a standout performance from her career so far, I think.
I hate to follow in your footsteps, Ben, but my answer is exactly the same.
Joke. I knew this was gonna happen.
I'll give different reasoning. I think alongside that, she's also got 5k, 10k and half records on the road this year alone. And I think seeing her kind of just race so often and always seem to give it everything was, it's pretty special to watch, really. She's got such a iconic style, right? Her running gait is so recognizable, and it's just been amazing to watch her race this year, to be honest. So I can't think. I tried to, because I knew that someone was going to say her, and I thought we should probably try and have some slightly more, varied answers. But yeah, I can't really look past what she's done this year. So Eilish is my pick too. So come on, Callum, mix it up a little bit.
So I'll be honest with you. I actually didn't. I considered it for maybe like a performance of the year, but I've gone with Keely Hodgkinson, female athlete of the year. Okay. And my reason is because she's always turned up to the major championships. She's medaled at them all pretty much. She never really has a bad race in what she does. But the main reason being is I don't think we realise, and we, as myself included, like just everyone in general, how good I think Mo is at 800 metres and how young she is. I think it's the equivalent of like, imagine Whiteman had come second to Ingebrigtsen in every race, you know, and was like always second, but it was Ingebrigtsen that beat him. I think he'd get as much respect as beating him almost, because it's like, oh, if it wasn't for this one kind of like standout person who we know is like a phenomenon, then you are the next best guy, if you see what I mean. So yeah, I think 100%. It's similar with Hodgkinson, where like to be knocking on the door, to be constantly pushing a thing Mo, who I think will go on to be one of the greatest ever female 800 meter runners based on her age and what she's done already. I think, you know, she deserves a bit of credit, and it's fine margins, isn't it, in running. If she'd been, you know, half a second, a quarter of a second quicker in those races, then she could be walking around with, you know, three golds around her neck rather than two silvers and a gold or whatever she ended up winning. So, yeah, I thought that was a bit of a pick.
Yeah, 100% agree with you there.
You're talking about that. You've got to chuck Laura Muir in that conversation too, haven't you, really?
Yeah, very similar, very similar. And those are, I'm not saying that, obviously, McColgan had some great results and the road times are phenomenal, but I think you can't underestimate the difficulty of 800 and 1500 on the track of trying to win those medals based on the process of having to go through the heats every single time. You know, you start from zero at the start of every championship. You have to go through the heats the same as every single person. You've got to get yourself to the final where you're expected to be, and then you have to give your biggest performance in your third race at every championship, which, you know, is, I think, up there with running the fast times on the road. But no, I think that's both solid picks, actually.
Yeah, for sure. Should we move on to the best male athlete of the year then?
Yeah, what do you think, Ben?
I'll let somebody else kick this off, because I'm pretty sure we're all going to say the same guy, to be honest with you.
I've gone different again. Tom, do you want to start?
No, go on. You start, Callum. Give all us right, a different pick.
I've started with Matt Stonier.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I thought everybody would say Whiteman, and I've been hearing a lot about Whiteman. And again, I don't want to confuse it with the performance of the year. Like, don't get me wrong, that performance in that race, that was amazing. And is he the best 1500 meter runner in the UK? Yes. Have I named not the best 1500 meter runner as the best? Yes, technically speaking. But the reason I've given this is just off pure progression of, I think maybe because I can relate to Matt in the sense of like, he ran 339. He went from 339 to 332 in
phenomenal,
one summer, went to two major championships and was in the final for both of them, and then got a contract with the biggest sports company that's ever existed in the world. Like, what a dream scenario. That's like, if that happened to a footballer or like an Mbappe or someone like that, you'd be like, you know, it's like a movie, isn't it? You're like,
yeah, 100%.
Get spotted at some trials, you score a goal, you go to the World Cup final, and then you get signed for Barcelona. Like, that's the equivalent as what he's done. So as from someone looking at it in an aspirational sense, I'm like, you know, 7 seconds improvement over 1500 to then become one of the best in the world and come sixth at the Euros is like pretty serious. Albeit he's in Whiteman's shadow because Whiteman won. So yeah, that was my pick.
Yeah, that's a real fair pick. I went for Jake Whiteman purely because of that 1500 meter sort of upset, if you like, in the World Champs where he beat Ingebrigtsen. He darted to the front with like 200 meters to go, and he just held on, and it was again, similar to McColgan, it was just an incredible spectacle to watch. Mm. But I actually gave Matt Stonier for the next category the most underrated athlete of the year.
Okay.
Yeah, that's so, fun, actually. It's a good shout.
Yeah, I think his improvement, as you were saying, has just been phenomenal this year. And to sign with Nike as well, that's just been incredible, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do next year, and hopefully he can keep progressing the way he's been progressing, because he's only, what is he, 20 years old, I think?
Yeah, 21,
so he's still got plenty of years ahead to develop even more, so
yeah,
definitely one to watch out for.
I think the only other person I'd say, obviously Jake Whiteman is obvious pick. What he did, you know, out, you know, out sprinting Ingebrigtsen is special. But yeah. I think Emil Kares has had a
that's my pick for underrated. That's
yeah, yeah.
He's had an unbelievable year when you look at it. If you get up his power of 10, it's hard to kind of put a whole year into. We tend to only remember things that have happened recently, right? But, you know, he equaled Mo Farah's road 10K record January of last year, 2022. 60.32 for the half in Valencia in October. Second at Night of the 10K PBs. Obviously, second at Eurocross Champs behind Ingebrigtsen after putting in an unbelievable shift. Like, he's had a huge year. And signing with Renato Canova as well, like, I think he's only going to skyrocket to even greater heights in 2023. So underrated is probably, yeah, it's probably a fairer position for him to be in. But I think also he's just had an unbelievable year that's worth mentioning.
The reason I put it for underrated is because he's just an enigma, Emil. Like, he's such a down-to-earth, nice guy, but he himself, if people listening to this obviously like podcasts, so you should listen to the Sunday podcast. And he's just done an interview recently. I was listening to it today. And he says at the start, he's like, the hosts are asking him, they're like, oh, we've been trying to get you on for a while. And he says that, yeah, I don't really like putting myself out there. Like, this is quite like a big thing for me. So imagine all the accolades that you've just read off. You'd think a guy like that would be really well known, even in the running scene. I don't think he's that well known. People know his name, but you wouldn't be able to really say something about him or what he does, or like, you know, you don't know that much about his background compared to a lot of runners who are far worse than him in ability, but know more about them, if you see what I mean. So I just think he's like, you know, he's unconventional with what he does. Who else in the UK is dared to go out to Kenya and ask Canova to coach him? I think he's a bit, you know, he's very under the radar for what he's done. So that's why I put him as underrated.
Yeah, fair enough. His range as well is frightening, really, when you look at it. Like, even just this year, I think 7.44 for 3K all the way up to 60.32 for the half. Yeah, it's pretty special athlete. So, yeah, probably underrated suits him better. But I think we've probably answered that next question now, haven't we, on the male side for underrated?
Yeah, I guess so. Do you guys have an underrated female that you wanted to throw out there? If not, I can kick things off.
Yeah, go for it.
So this one is a bit of a rogue one, and again, I don't know if underrated. I think they probably are quite rated highly, but just because they're quite new on the scene, is Ines Fitzgerald, who's only 16 years old. He's being coached by Joe Pavey, who's also coaching Jake Smith at the moment. And Ines, I think she just came fourth at the Euros cross country. You might have seen her on Athletics Weekly because she actually, for environmental reasons, chose to travel on the train over to
Turin. That's right.
So that's how people might have heard of her.
Interesting.
She is like absolutely rapid for a 16-year-old. Like, the talent is crazy. So perhaps, again, not underrated, but maybe under the radar or low profile runner to watch out for. You know, she won the Cardiff Cross under 20s as a 16-year-old, went to Euro under 20s as a 16-year-old. I think she just ran like a 16-minute, 16.06 or 16-something park run just on Christmas Day, as you do. So, yeah, one to look out for. That was my pick, Ines Fitzgerald.
Yeah, amazing. I think, I don't know if necessarily underrated is the right word to describe her, but I think Rose Harvey's gone a little bit
good shout.
Under the radar. I didn't realise quite how significant her rise was, but she only went pro like this year after being a lawyer, signed with Puma, and in 2 years she's gone from like 256, 257 for the marathon down to 227 and first Brit at London, which is staggering, really. And she seems so down to earth. I met her really briefly at a Puma event before London Marathon, actually, and she was so happy to speak to everybody about running and about her training and about, you know, the shoes that she's going to wear and all that kind of stuff. So it was great to see her perform so well at London. And I think she's definitely maybe gone a little bit under the radar from just a progression standpoint. In 2 years, that's unbelievable, really. So I think sky's the limit for her.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Ben, do you have a name to check out that's different?
Not that I can really think of, to be honest with you.
No,
not for that one.
So I think the final bit in our 2022 wrap-up in terms of the actual running world is looking forward to 2023 and what we're excited about, whether it be an event or a person or, you know, something related to running. So anything you're looking forward to, boys, for 2023?
I've got some pretty huge news just coming in, actually. Chelmsford AC are going to be in the Premier League division of the National League this year, which is, yeah, it's incredible. It's the first time in our history. The boys are really looking forward to it. And the boys and the girls, we've got trips to Glasgow, Manchester, to name a few. So, yeah, Chelmsford AC is going to be put on the map in 2023. So it's going to be a big year for the club.
That's lovely. Yeah, well, I love that.
Are you going to be taking part, Ben? Will we see some vlogs, some away days?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, over the 5,000 meters, I reckon I'll give it a crack, or maybe the 3,000 if there's not the 5,000 meter option. But yeah, should be some real good opportunities there for the guys and girls at the club to race some proper competition across the country. So yeah, it should be really exciting, and we've also attracted quite a lot of second claim athletes as well since we. Got that promotion. So yeah, all jokes aside, it will be a really exciting year for the club, and I'm looking forward to being a part of it.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing you document that as well on YouTube, because again, it's something that's not really done enough, is it? Spreading like the message of how good our club scene can be.
100%. So, yeah.
Yeah, look forward to seeing that, Ben.
Thank you.
Tom, yourself?
I've sort of spoken about it to death already, but I am just really, really excited to see some of the people who are stepping up to the marathon take on the marathon. Obviously, Eilish was supposed to do London and just raced herself into the ground, it seems like, over that summer, and so wasn't able to. But to see her step up, to see Emil Caress and Mark Scott as well step up to the marathon, I think that's the main one for me. I'm just, yeah, excited to see what those guys can do.
Good show.
Yeah.
Yeah, we spoke about that last episode, didn't we? That's going to be a cracker, I think. Yeah. It's going to be fun to watch. So fingers crossed they all make it fit and choose to enter it. Mine's on a similar vein. Mine is just qualifying for the world champs. I love the championships, like any track championships. I love watching them. But I think there's something really unique about how we do the qualifying in the UK that is really good to watch, because for a lot of the distances, there's no dead set favourites of like, okay, this person's going to qualify. So I love, you know, it's brutal sport. Everyone spending the whole year, you know, a lot of the contracts rely on whether you're going to qualify for things, and, you know, working your way all the way up to a world champs qualifying and an Olympics qualifying. And then you turn up in that final and there might be six of you that have got the time and only two of you are actually going to get picked. And it all depends on that race. I think that's so great to watch. And kind of
certainly will make things a lot more exciting, won't it?
There's so much
from a spectator's point of view.
Yeah, there's so much on the line, and I'd argue there's more on the line than when you actually get to the championships, because that's just, you know, if you win the medal and stuff and you're not a favourite, that's a real bonus. It's like you're not going to come away from world champs and everyone's going to, you know, be disappointed that you only came fourth or fifth in final. Whereas if you come third at the British trials and you don't get picked because only the top two are going, you know, what else do you have to play for in the year? You know, it's a massive thing. So, yeah, I'm excited for qualifying.
Sounds good.
Cool. What are we on to next, boys?
I think we're stepping into my world and talking about running shoes, aren't we, for a little bit?
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about shoes.
Buckle up, everybody. No, we'll try not to go into too much detail on this, but obviously these days you can't really avoid the fact that shoes and shoe technology and what's coming up and what's better than what is such a hot topic that I thought would be a good idea for us. Mainly myself and Ben, I suppose, having access to a lot of different shoes over the year. I've just given some of our favourite picks for, you know, just daily miles and race day. So I think to kick it all off, I'd actually be interested to go to you, Callum.
Yeah.
And find out what has been your favourite just standard daily mileage shoe of 2022. What's been the shoe that you've picked up and banked the most amount of miles in, or enjoyed banking the most amount of miles in?
Yeah, so mine is actually the Puma Deviate Nitro 2, I believe it's called.
Yes.
Which is the best shoe, in my opinion, for being an all-rounder. That's how I went off. I didn't go off the best, you know, like I love an Invincible for an easy run or something like that. But this shoe, if I have to put one in my bag to take away that I need to do a workout in, an easy run in, and go to the gym in, for example, like I would always choose that shoe. I think it's quality. a good mix of all things. And it's durable as well. It doesn't break. I break a lot of shoes on the way that I run. I've got a bit of a weird running gait, and I think it kind of like rips the fabric on the outsides. But these ones are, you know, rock solid. So, yeah, that's my pick.
Yeah, Puma have been unbelievable, really, like the resurgence that they've made. And you're dead right. Like, they build shoes to last. Like, the outsole itself, that Puma grip rubber on the outsole is incredibly durable. It's grippy in basically all weather conditions. So, yeah, it's a solid pick, that. Very solid.
Yeah, I had the first edition of that shoe, but I didn't actually get on well with it, to be honest with you. Had a little bit of like heel slippage in the Deviate one.
The exact same. So Ben, you actually gave that pair to me.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I was like, a shocking pair. Here you go, mate.
Yeah. Have this. Yeah, Ben gave me that pair because I told him that I really liked the second version. Mm. And I tried them, and it is different. The most of the shoes the same, but the back is 100% different. And I actually got quite bad blister the first time I wore them, and I didn't really, you know,
trying to end his career.
It's actually a very common issue with like some of the first generation Puma shoes. The heel counter itself and that whole cushioning around the back of the Achilles and ankle was very thin. And there are lots and lots of people who liked the shoes, but just had real issues with blisters and couldn't wear them without taping up their Achilles. Or, like you say, Ben, just had heel slippage to the point where if you've got other shoes to wear that fit better and have better lockdown, you're going to choose them over a shoe that could give you blisters. But yeah, I think they've really fixed that in the second iterations of a lot of their shoes. And they've got some wild stuff coming out next year. So Puma, definitely one to watch, I think, for next year.
Sure.
What about yourself, Ben? What have you been banking the most amount of miles in? I think I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, my favorite daily trainer of the year has been the On Cloud Monster, which I still can't believe I'm saying that out loud, because On running shoes typically have been pretty average, if not terrible, over the last maybe 3 or 4 years. Quite firm ride. They've got this cloud technology, which some people absolutely love, but it's not necessarily the most responsive midsole. But this year they brought out a new sort of type of shoe called the Monster, which is sort of a max cushioned daily trainer, and yeah, just got on really, really well with it. I don't know why, but it just suits my foot strike really well whenever I go for a run in it. It's comfortable. I always find my easy runs are sort of the faster end of the easy run spectrum for me, which is always a good sign that I'm enjoying a shoe. And I think I've got I've got 2 or 3 pairs of the Monster now that I sort of rotate between. And if I could have one daily trainer to, like Callum was saying, to go on holiday with, it's always the Monster that comes with me. So, yeah, that'd be my pick. What about yourself, Tom?
Yeah, I can't quite believe I'm saying this either, but the Cloud Monster is undeniably the best daily mileage shoe for me personally. It's the shoe that I've run the most in over the last year. It's the shoe that I did like the bulk of marathon training in when it comes to just those standard steady runs, long runs, you know, anything other than a session basically was in the Cloud Monster. And similar to you, Ben, I think just the versatility of that shoe is very surprising. Like when I tried a few On shoes before and like you say, hated them, to be honest. Yeah. Which is why I don't mind saying that this is like my favorite shoe of the year, because of how bad other On shoes have been.
Yeah.
But there's something about them. They give you a little pep in your step, especially if you land in like midfoot to forefoot, I think.
Yeah.
And you know, they're fairly light for the amount of stack that you've got underfoot, durable as well. Like I've put hundreds of miles in a single pair, and like you, I've somehow managed to acquire about 4 pairs of Cloud Monsters over the year from various different events and stuff. And I just love them. Like if there's one shoe that I could only wear that shoe for the year, it'd definitely be the Cloud Monster. And probably the more boring pick would be the Invincible 2, which I know both of you boys have got and run in. But when it comes to just like an enjoyable shoe to run in, like coming back from injury since London, it's basically the only shoe that I want to wear for just those easy runs, because it is just fun. It makes a tedious 30-minute jog feel actually fairly enjoyable, which no other shoe really does in the same way as the Invincible, I don't think. So yeah,
world-class
Monster.
Invincible world-class shoe. I don't know what they've done. Well, you'll know what they've done, but it is really good.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it's special. Before we go on to race shoe, I thought it'd be interesting to also talk about shoes that maybe we tried and didn't get on with. So Ben, if I go to you first, what are there any shoes out of the probably close to hundreds that you've tried?
The dud of the year for me was the Zoom Fly 5 from Nike. Yeah. It was sold to sort of the consumer as this new Zoom X midsole, and it was going to be a great sort of training shoe to pair with the Alpha Fly and the Vapor Fly. So I was really keen to get hold of it, and I think a lot of people were at the time. And when I got it, it was a lot heavier than I thought it was going to be. And to be honest, the midsole was just dead. It had absolutely nothing sort of to it in terms of energy return that you would expect from so-called Zoom X midsole. And without slating it too much, it just wasn't a great shoe. And unfortunately didn't live up to what I think Nike had pitched it as, which was a sort of up-tempo shoe for workouts. It's more of a daily plodder for me. And actually, that's probably the one shoe of the year I just actually sent back, because I'm never going to use it again after the first few runs. So just sent it back and called it quits on that one. I don't know if you guys have tried that one.
Yeah, I echo your sentiments there, really. Like, I think Nike have had both a really good and really terrible year when it comes to running shoes, because they've done this thing where they've stuck Zoom X on the side of a few shoes.
Pretty much everything.
You know, you talk about the Zagama and the Zoom Fly 5 in particular. And it's just not the same experience that you'll get from full Zoom X midsole in like the Alpha Fly or Vapor Fly or Invincible. It's not even in the same stratosphere as those. Because what you've got is a very dull, uninspiring, like standard EVA carrier foam, just with a bit of Zoom X in there. And it just doesn't, it doesn't really do much. It's fair enough. I think a lot of people would probably agree that the Zoom Fly 5, for what it's intended to be, is just not
didn't quite live up to it.
Yeah. What about yourself, Callum? Anything on your radar that you haven't really got on with?
I do. You'll have to bear with me because I can't remember whether it's the 6 or the 7 that came out this year, but the Adi Zero Adios, so not the like Carbon Racer Adios, not the Adios Pro, the Adi Zero one, which I don't know if it's the 6 or the 7, but I initially got it as my thinking was something to train in that's a bit faster and lighter than an easy run shoe, but it's not me wearing a Vaporfly or a Carbon shoe to train in, just when I, you know, maybe I'm on an even surface and I don't trust the Vaporfly or something like that. Yeah. But what I've actually found is the purpose, and maybe this is because I bought it for the wrong purpose, but it's not good enough at either of those two things, if you see what I mean. It's too in the middle, where I'm not getting enough from it when I'm doing something faster. I'm kind of like, oh, I wish I had, you know, a bit of a better shoe on here. Like, it's not feeling too fast. And equally, it's too uncomfortable for me to be like, oh, well, I'll just keep them and I'll go for some jogs in them and I'll go out on an easy run. It's, you know, it's a weird one. So, yeah, I was a bit disappointed by that because I thought, oh, I've cracked it here. I don't have to train in Carbon shoes. Yeah. But I've still got a good shoe to train in. And, you know, it just didn't really do that for me. A bit disappointed with that one.
Yeah, there are people who get on really well with that Adios series. But I agree. I think it's one of those where it doesn't tick enough boxes really for it to be worth it. I mean, the good thing is these days you can pick it up unbelievably cheap.
Just having a little look here, and literally everywhere it's on sale, about 70-80 quid. So in terms of a cheap sort of, well, cheapish nowadays anyway, you can pick it up fairly reasonably priced. But yeah, I'm not sure if I would, I'd be tempted at 80 quid for that one.
I think for me, the real dud shoe of the year, not because it's a bad shoe, but because of what I hoped it would be, was the Street Fly. There's so much hype behind this shoe, right? From literally about a year before it released, you were seeing it on the feet of the Bauman boys, you were seeing it on the feet of like Jessica Hull and the guys out there in Australia. And there was so much hype behind it as being this new breed of super shoe. And the Proto Edition kind of came into stock and went out again within a few hours. Like, people were absolutely gagging for it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't think it's a bad shoe. It's 130 quid. It's unbelievably lightweight, sub 200 grams in my size, like UK 8.5, which is phenomenal on the scales, but it just doesn't really do anything for me. Like, I don't know what I would use it for that I wouldn't prefer to use something else for. Yeah. You got to think, like, maybe track sessions, like if you're doing twos and fours on the track or something like that, and there's not a huge amount of volume. But I did a few sessions in it, like some K reps and stuff, where the total volume of that session was maybe 8 miles, and it wasn't particularly comfortable. I don't think the fit's that great, and I really don't think you get much from... There's a little P-back shank, right? There's not a carbon plate or a full-length plate, but just a little bit of P-backs in the kind of midfoot type area. And I don't think you get anything from that. And yeah, it just feels a bit mushy to me.
Yeah, I agree. I've used it on the track a little bit, and it's been all right, but nothing spectacular.
Yeah.
The other thing I've used it for is a few grass sessions.
All right, yeah.
And the grip's actually surprisingly quite good on that. I think the outsole is... it's got like a ribbed sort of pattern to it, and that sort of grips, especially the grass, even wet grass, quite well. So I've ended up using it for just grass sessions, to be honest, but for a shoe that was hyped to be the next big thing, that's a bit... yeah, I agree, it's been a little bit sort of a dud of the year.
Yeah.
For our listeners that are now searching what a P-Bax shank is, because I've just done that myself and found out what that is, P-Bax, copyrighted term, by the way, is a polymer designed for high-performance shoes and foams. So there you go, everyone, in case you wondered what that was. So is that just, instead of carbon, it's just some kind of fancy foam?
Yeah, it's similar to how like the Endorphin Speed series from Saucony has like a nylon plate in it, and you're seeing like the... even the Cloud Monster, to be fair, has like a speed board in it. It's just... it adds a little bit more rigidity to the shoe, a little bit more integrity to the foam, especially when you've got something like Zoom X, which is so soft and so compressive. You need something to stabilize that. So that's what they did with the Street Fly. But yeah, for me, it just didn't really work particularly.
I wonder
well.
if they extended that shank to be like a full length plate, it would have made that shoe a little bit different, because from looking at sort of a cross section of that shoe from when it came out, the P-back shank that we're talking about is only maybe like 4 or 5 centimeters long, and it sort of sits underneath the heel section of the shoe. So in terms of when you're landing on your mid and you're up into your toes, it doesn't really give you a lot in terms of stability. So I feel like if they maybe extended that to make it a bit more of a full length plate, it might improve the sort of performance of that shoe a little bit. It'd be interesting to see if they bring out a Street Fly 2 in next year, maybe.
Yeah, I'll be really interested to see if this is a shoe that sticks around, or if it's one that sort of fades away or just stays the same for a few years and then gets phased out.
Yeah.
But anyway, on to the most important category, probably. Race day shoes. Callum, we'll go to you first again. I think I know the answer to this, but you might actually have two answers, really, based on track and road.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. I think I've cheated a bit by saying the Dragonflies.
Nah, you're not cheating. If that's what you race in most, then that's
this year I've raced... I mean, the pair of spikes that I'm still wearing right now, I remember the first race I did in them was a final in America indoors. So that's what, like maybe February or March. So they've been through me through indoor track, which had slightly different surfaces to outdoor track, then on loads of different outdoor tracks of different, you know, bounce, like grip, weather, all that kind of thing. And then into cross country where, you know, I've had some where it's been terrible mud, some where it's been firm grass, and they've been comfortable throughout, held up well throughout. I've never thought, oh, I bet someone else has got an edge because they're wearing, you know, something else. All I've done is change the spike length in the bottom and they've been good to go. So yeah, I'd say the Dragonfly is the best for me, no brainer.
Yeah, and you'll probably be really excited to... I don't know if you've seen the Dragonfly XC, which is coming out next year. Yeah, it looks like a weapon.
Yeah, but you know more than me clearly, but like apart from the upper, what else can be different, you know?
Yeah, it's going to be very similar, but it's got XC at the end of it. And like you said,
in America, that will sell, let me tell you.
Yeah,
but it'll be similar to trail shoes, right? If you've got like the Asics Nova Blast, for example, and the Asics Nova Blast Trail, very, very similar shoes, just slightly different outsole configuration, and the upper's got a few more things that make it more trail friendly. I think with the Dragonfly XC, without knowing the ins and outs of it in any great detail, I'd assume you're right, that's basically what it's going to be, just a slightly more not water repellent or waterproof upper, but just something a bit more plasticky,
yeah,
for lack of a technical term, to make it a bit better in those wet conditions.
Yeah, I agree. I think for me, in terms of my favourite shoe to race on the track, I actually wouldn't say the Dragonfly would be my pick. Actually, I'd go for the Asics Metaspeed LD, I think it's called.
Nice.
I think I was pretty lucky to get hold of a pair, to be honest with you. I think they were quite difficult to get hold of this year. And it was sort of a shoe that came out from Asics, which is a spike designed for track racing, but it doesn't actually have any spikes on it, if that makes any sense. It's sort of like a spikeless spike. Mm-hmm. The outsole is sort of this plastic, very grippy sort of outsole, which doesn't have an actual anywhere to put your spikes in. And at first I was like, oh, this is a bit, you know, a bit interesting. But having raced in it, it felt really, really good, very, very comfortable, and it seemed to offer me a little bit more protection than the Dragonfly. I think for me, when I get a bit tired towards the end of track races, especially the longer track races for me, I tend to sort of heel strike a little bit.
Yeah.
And this shoe just seems to have a little bit more under the heel section of the shoe compared to the Dragonfly, and I've really gotten well with it. I think that would be my favourite for racing on the track.
It's definitely worked well for like the likes of Mokatir and Eilish, hasn't it, on the track?
Yeah, 100%.
But yeah, it's a bit of a niche one, and you're right. It was really difficult to get hold of. But randomly, if anybody does want a pair on Pro Direct at the moment, it retails for $230, which is a wild price for any running shoe. But we've got them for £161 at the moment in a pretty wide size run. So. Bit of shameless promo, but if anybody wants to get a pair of the Metaspeed LD, which is, yeah, by all accounts, an unbelievable spike for the, or not a spike, but you know what I mean, for the track, yeah, get a great deal at the moment at Pro Direct. But onto the road, Ben, you've, like me, you've probably tried everything that's got a carbon plate in it this year. What's your top pick?
Yeah, I think when it comes to road racing, it's been a little bit difficult this year to pick a favourite in terms of my racing shoe. I think across the board, basically every decent running shoe manufacturer has basically brought out a carbon racing shoe that is almost on par with each other. So I think special mentions would go again to the Asics, the Metaspeed Plus. I really enjoyed that shoe. Ran a 5K PB in that shoe out in Malaga. So really enjoyed that from when I first put it on my feet. I've also really enjoyed the Adidas Adios Pro 3. It's been an incredible long run shoe for me. Yeah. And as Tom was saying in his, when you're running through your weeks, it's incredible in the wet conditions, which for running throughout the winter here in the UK is really important. But when it comes to racing, I would still pick the Alphafly 1. I know it's not a 2022 release, but for me, as again Tom was saying, that shoe just seems to work so well for me in terms of efficiency, especially over the longer distances for half marathon and marathon. I think it's been a real standout for me, and probably is why the Alphafly 2 was also a bit of a flop this year, because the Alphafly 1 is just so hard to beat.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's a really difficult one to answer. I think still, if anybody's listening, like the grass is always greener, right? And I think that genuinely this year is the first year where, name a brand, they've got a solid competitive carbon plated shoe. Maybe not every brand, like Brooks and Ultra and On are still yet to really step up to the plate, and On haven't released the Echo 3.0 yet, which is going to be probably very exciting. But, you know, Saucony, New Balance, Adidas, Puma, like they've all got a really solid option out there, and I like all of them. But frustratingly, I think I would have to go with the Alphafly 2 just based off performance alone, which ultimately, if we're talking about race shoes, there's no good preferring a race shoe over another one if it doesn't get you better results on the race day itself, right? Because that sort of negates the purpose of it.
Yeah.
And there's shoes I enjoy wearing a lot more than the Alphafly 2, like the Adios Pro 3 stands out, the Saucony Endorphin Pro 3 stands out as well in that regard. But every time I've worn the Alphafly, whether it's the OG or the Alphafly 2, I've had some of the best runs of my life. In fact, all of the best runs that I've ever had have been in either the original Alphafly or the Alphafly 2. And I think back to Copenhagen Half, Ben, where that was my biggest week of volume out of the whole marathon block. I did like a 20-mile marathon session on the Wednesday, like a progression run on the Thursday, steady run on the Saturday before. and then Copenhagen half on very tight legs. And I still felt really, really good in that race. It helps that it's such a nice course and the weather was good and all the rest of it. But I just can't look past the fact that my legs felt so fresh at the end and I was able to push on those last few Ks where normally you're hanging out your backside. So I think really I would still go Alpha Flight OG as my overall favorite racing shoe. But from 2022 releases, the Alpha Flight 2 would be what I'd be most comfortable racing any distance over kind of maybe 10K and above.
I'd agree with you there.
Yeah, which is frustrating because it's, you know, it's a bit of a cop-out answer saying like Vaporfly or Alphafly is your favourite race shoe when there's so many other options out there. But yeah, just can't argue with the data really when it comes to that.
Any news, Tom, on this On shoe? Because obviously it's going to be pretty good based on how good the spikes have been or seem to be on the pros. And yeah, is it coming out this year or what?
Yeah, it's going to be a special shoe. I know that much. Ben, you might even know more about the release date of this one than me because On, they keep their cars close to their chest, and all I know is it's going to be a little while still, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems they've got some production issues. I think literally every pro that runs for On has got at least a couple of pairs of them now, so they're definitely out there. Yeah. But in terms of getting access to them in the public sphere, I still think we're a good maybe 6 months away, unfortunately. Yeah. But
one that I'm excited for is the Hoka Rocket X2.
Yes.
Yeah, that looks really good.
A lot of the pros have them already. I know some of the, maybe more sub-elite pros are getting them hopefully in January or February, so I'm told. Yeah. So that'll be cool to see how they do. It seems, looking at the silhouette and stuff, to be, you know, a much better shoe than the previous Hoka lineup. So, yeah, we'll see.
I think they've changed the midsole, haven't they? Tom, you probably know a little bit more. They're going for, they've got Pebacks?
Yeah. It's their midsole. First proper super shoes. So if you look at like Carbon X2 and like the Rocket X.
Yeah.
Like they're not super shoes in this day and age. They're still decent shoes if you get on with them and you enjoy like the feeling of Hoka underfoot, but they're not comparable to anything else on the market really. Whereas this Rocket X2, like you say, with that Pebax midsole, they've got a proper super foam now, right? Which is what you really need when it comes to that formula of what makes a super shoe. The foam is half the battle. It's most of it, to be honest, most of that equation. But yeah, last thing on that On shoe, I'm pretty sure one of the main reasons why it's taken so long to actually go to market is because On are always big on premium, right? Their kit is unbelievable, laser cut hems and all that good stuff, but it's always very, very expensive. I'm pretty sure that the materials that they're using for the Echo 3.0 are just very expensive and hard to come by, which means they can't produce that many of them. So when they do get released, it'll be very limited. And the price is probably going to be outrageous. Like I think, I might be wrong, but I think it's going to be in the region of about 280 quid, which crazy is money. Alpha Fly type money, which is, it is mental.
If you're listening and you want to send us a pair,
come on.
As you've heard, Ben and Tom, I've got a lot of shoes to test, whereas I don't. So if you can only afford to give out one, because I know three will be a lot based off what Tom said, then just send them my way. We're all a similar size anyway.
You two can share a pair, by the sound of things.
Yeah. And Ben, you can just wear some like thicker socks.
I just wear two pairs of socks, yeah. So we only need one pair of shoes and we'll give it a test for you.
Wonderful. But yeah, I think without spending too much time on shoes, I think that pretty much wraps it up. I know there's some people who probably couldn't care less, but I know that there's also a lot of people who are absolutely obsessed with running shoes, running technology and all that good stuff. And it's only going to get better in 2023, I think, like with some of these releases. So lots 100%. To look forward to. And it's a good time to be a running fan, basically.
It certainly is. So to wrap up the 2023 running season, I thought we'd talk a little bit through our own personal experiences. So first up, we've got our favourite races of the year. Who wants to kick us off here?
Well, Tom, I think we know your answer, so you go for it.
Yeah, for me, Copenhagen Half was a pretty special one. Like the weekend itself was just really fun, first and foremost, to be around so many people. Was out there with Ben and ProDirect and there was a solid group of other people who were just happened to be racing it. But it's a beautiful course. It's dead flat. The organisation at the start is a little bit ropey with people like defecating in the forest beforehand and pissing against the actual cubicles rather inside them. But aside from that, the actual race itself was amazing. I thought the support the whole way along was just the right amount. It wasn't so much that it was kind of anxiety inducing, but it was never, it never felt that deadly. Lots of groups to run with, like a very, very fast race. So it attracts a lot of fast people. So with me running it as a progression run, I was with a group the entire time, just going from group to group, which was really nice. And yeah, it was just probably the best I've ever felt in a race as well. So I couldn't really knock that, apart from throwing up everywhere on the finish line. That was ideal. I overdid the beetroot shots, right? I absolutely hammered them the week before. And yeah, my vomit was bright red, which was a little bit scary at first, to be honest. But I did correlate it to the beetroot and not.
Yeah, that's good.
But anyway, that was my pick, Copenhagen half.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout. I really enjoyed that race as well. I think, yeah, me and Tom had pretty much roommates for that weekend, which is really nice. And I had a full send attitude, I remember, and it actually paid off for once. I just absolutely went for it on the gun, and managed to hold on for probably one of my best results on the road. So yeah, the half marathon in Copenhagen was pretty good, but it didn't quite top the full marathon, which was my first marathon. That I also did in Copenhagen in, I think it was around May time at the start of the year. And just as a first marathon, it was just everything I could have dreamt of. Incredible experience, amazing sense of achievement when I crossed the line. And I think that'll be hard to beat moving forward. But yeah, that would definitely be my favourite race of the year.
Yeah, Copenhagen's just a special place, really. Like, even running aside, it's just such a nice place to go. Great little coffee shops and stuff, aren't there? So yeah, if anyone certainly wants is, a yeah. little European getaway, Copenhagen, if you've not raced there before, stick it right at the top of your bucket list, I reckon.
Yeah, and both courses are actually really fast, I think. The half marathon especially is like unbelievably quick. So yeah, if you're looking to do a quick marathon or half marathon next year, then yeah, give Copenhagen a thought.
Yeah, well, mine's not as Scandinavian as yours, I'm afraid. Mine's actually on the track and is Penn Relays, Pennsylvania Relays, which, if you don't know, is basically a relay carnival in America where loads of high schoolers and college kids and some pros from America and from Jamaica as well all come together for like 4 or 5 days, I think it is, of racing. There's literally hundreds of races. It's like a military operation for how they get all of the different relays and individual races done. It's been around since 1895, so however many years that is, that's, you know, 120 whatever, so a pretty prestigious event. I was racing the mile, well, raced the 5k and raced the mile. The mile in particular was an amazing experience because it was a professional race that I kind of somehow managed to weasel my way into through my coach sending him an email and kind of, you know, saying some nice things about me, which was good. So just the experience of the day was just like crazy. Like, I remember getting there so early and just sitting in this like athlete room, got loads of free shit, which is the first good thing. Like, there's just stuff everywhere. Like, I had to actually stop myself eating all these snacks and stuff for the race, but it was like, it was free. So I was kind of like, I'll put some in the bag. And then all the other athletes started to arrive and I was like, oh, it's Devin Allen sat there. I'm like, obviously you've got to play it cool at that point because some of them you're going to race and you don't want to act like, you know, you're out of your depth. And then Athing Mo came and sat down. And I was like, fuck, Athing Mo's literally just sat there. And I was like, I remember I've never ever done like static stretches or like yoga type moves before I'm going to warm up. But I remember loads of people doing mobility and shit like that. So I was like, oh, fuck it, I'm just going to do some as well. So I remember just like watching people.
Didn't want to look out of place.
Yeah, I was just like watching people do a stretch and then I would leave it long enough that it didn't look like I was copying their stretch. And then I'd just do it myself. Kind of like when you're copying someone's homework at school and you get it enough wrong to make it look like you've got copied them. That's basically what I was doing. But yeah, then I won the mile as well, which was insane experience. Like winning the race obviously leaves a fonder memory on it, but it still would have been really cool regardless of the result. And rather than medals, they give you a gold watch. They have like a signature watch that's every year designed. So there's a new design for every single year. And just of the professional races, they have like a gold watch that you get. So I remember Sydney McLaughlin in the 100 hurdles was the race before me. And then as she was getting presented with her watch, we set off, and then I won, and now I've got this,
no
this
way.
this nice little watch.
That's
to remember
a pretty
it
special
by,
story.
So, yeah, pretty cool experience.
Yes,
and you got a great little Instagram clip there on the reel as well. I remember seeing you coming across the line, absolutely screaming.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's funny, the American commentators love it as well. Like when you do something like that, they're like, chest and pound. It's not so much a word. And they're just like loving it. Like, oh, honestly, he's put some hurt on that finishing tape, John, has he? It's so funny, man.
Can you put a picture of that gold watch up on the Run It Three Ways Instagram story something? Just so we can have a little look at it.
It's not quite a Rolex, but I'll put it on.
Oh, it's better than a Rolex, that. 100%.
Just 100% worthless, but yeah.
But it's priceless to you, Callum.
Yeah, very true. Very true. So yeah, that's my race of the year.
That's a pretty good pick. So on to our 2023 running goals. Has anyone got any big goals for next year?
This is a long podcast, isn't it? This
certainly is.
Point. It was always going to be a bit bigger. But yeah, 2023 goals. The main one really for me is just to race more. Like hearing you boys talk about all of these different race experiences, I realize how poor I am in race experience. Like I've only really done like this marathon build up was the only time I've really raced that frequently, and even then it wasn't that much. So I think I need to stop being so precious, because I always had it in my head that I need to be in this shape before I race another 5K, or I need to be in this shape before I do a half, or run a certain time in the marathon to be, you know, like to qualify to be a marathon runner. So I think really I'm just going to try and totally get rid of that mindset and just race more for the fun of it. Like
I think that's a really good idea.
Yeah, I haven't raced a 5K for like over 2 years maybe, and that 5K is my PB.
What are you doing in February 17th, Friday night?
Yeah, see, that's the sort of thing I'm talking about, just throw myself into the deep end on one of those.
You should sign up for that. I'm deadly serious. See,
yeah, what's the date on that again?
February 17th, Friday night, Battersea Park.
Yeah, that's not bad actually. A race on a weekday is pretty solid for me. All right, I'll look into that. Yeah, that might be first race of the year. That,
there you go. See you there.
Sign him up.
But yeah, that's the main one. Race more, have more experiences in that regard. From a running standpoint, anyway.
Sure. What about yourself, Callum?
Mine, yeah. To be honest, like pretty time orientated. Honestly, as much as I would like to, I obviously have like, you know, just want to enjoy it, want to keep progressing, do whatever. But really, I just want to run fast. To be honest, so probably end up focusing on the 1500 and the 5K, mainly the 1500. I just run something as fast as I can. Honestly, like it could be a second quicker than this year, could be 3 seconds quicker. Who knows, really? And you know, the proof will be, we'll find out in May, basically, whether I'm any good at 1500. And then hopefully a 5K will kind of supplement that a little bit as well. So just off the general strength, I'd like to get a 5K PB. You know, go 10 or 15 seconds quicker than I did this year would be really good. So, yeah, that's kind of what I'm mainly working towards, to be honest, quite time-related goals, which seems a bit harsh, but that's the reality of it.
Yeah, I think for me it's pretty similar, all sort of time-related goals. I always sort of sit down and write them out at the start of the year. And mine sort of span from the 5K distance. I've got, I'd like to run sub-15 again, but this time at a park run. Which would be quite fun. My running journey has always been quite closely linked to park run, so I'd love to give that a go if I can break that barrier at park run. I think that'd be pretty cool. And then my sort of main big goal of the year is to try and break 30 minutes for the 10K, which would be a real big achievement if I can do that. My current PB is 30:56, so I've got 57 seconds to knock off that over the course of the year. And I think that's probably my most competitive distance, maybe that or the half marathon. So in terms of 2023 goals, the sub 30 for 10K will probably be my main priority going into the new year.
Yeah, I love that. Punchy. Very yes, punchy. Indeed.
Shall I quickly, should we go over some race results, or do you reckon we should start wrapping it up? Because we're coming up to an hour and a half.
Honestly, I reckon the race results can wait, to be honest.
I agree.
It was that important. If you want to find out what happened, Google the following races. Ribble Valley 10K, San Silvestre, is that what it's called? Spanish New Year's Eve race. And the Ely New Year's Eve 10K. If you want to find out who won them, Google's your friend or Bing, and they'll tell you.
Incredibly efficient way to do the running news, that, isn't it? This happened. Just fucking Google it.
Three events, Google it.
Realistically, it's 92 minutes or 90 minutes. Nobody's listening right now.
Yeah.
So if you are and you've listened, fair play, fair play.
And I think we'll probably skip the listeners' questions as well, to be honest with you. Otherwise, everyone's going to be completely switched off. But yeah, anything more to add for this week's episode, guys?
I don't think so, really. I think, we've covered a lot of ground today.
Yeah, episode number 3 ticked off. But yeah, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Sounds good. Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, thank you very much, guys. Speak to you soon.
All right. Cheers, guys.
Ciao.
Ciao.